We don't quite have a quorum, but let's get started. Mr. Hubinger? This is the budget recommendation for the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed. And I understand you didn't want to go first, but I understand. It is what it is.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Greg Hubinger from the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Our request to go second was partially driven by the fact that the House and Senate from LCC are conducting compensation studies through NCSL. And the House received its compensation study several weeks ago and has had time to examine that. We haven't had that ability to do that yet, so we're having to do rough estimations for our compensation recommendations. So when we talk about the NCSL study, it's based on that. You'd have a better understanding of that if the House went first, because they have a lot more information about that. But anyway, members, thanks for this opportunity to talk about our 2021 budget proposal for the Joint Legislative Offices. You heard from us earlier in the session, several months ago now, when we provided an overview of our offices and our base budgets. I'd like to begin with some caveats about our budget proposals. Our budgets, like those of the House and Senate, are the same this current biennium as they were 4 years ago when the 16-17 appropriations were adopted. Since that time, compensation costs have increased, operating expenses have increased, the dues for NCSL and Council of State Governments have also increased, and we've had to absorb those costs. I also need to say that this budget hasn't yet been approved by the LCC. That commission met last week to review our proposals, our budget proposals, but we didn't have any numbers yet on compensation increases for staff. We needed to wait for some direction from leadership. The budget we're suggesting today includes compensation increases based on what the House and we have learned from the NCSL study to date. I've mentioned the compensation study and the fact that you've had your study completed for about 3 weeks, but we've been told by the NCSL staff that our situation is similar to the House's. And I don't want to steal the thunder from the House Controller and House HR Director, who will be talking about the comp study when they do their presentation to you in the next part of your agenda. Our proposed budgets are based on our current staffing levels. Any changes in staff are shown as change level items. We do include in our compensation, in our budgets, projected increases in costs for insurance that were projected by MMB. And there's an increase in retirement contributions that increase was established in law during the 2017 session. Our compensation increases are based on the NCSL study. Like the House, NCSL is telling us that our salary ranges are out of sync with those of the Senate, selected positions or comparable positions at MMB and other employers. We also recognize the principles that have been recommended by NCSL. That we update our ranges so that we're comparable to those of the House and Senate, and ensure that we adjust those ranges regularly so that we remain competitive and that we align our ranges across the legislature with the House and Senate. NCSL also recommends that as an employer that we provide regular salary adjustments reflecting both cost of living and performance. And finally, that we migrate from our current structure of providing promotional increases every 3 years and instead do those 2 years if the employee is performing at least a satisfactory level. I suggest that if you have detailed questions about the compensation component of this, that you hold those for the House staff when they're presenting their budget. Other changes are shown under the change items in the budget pages, such as new positions. There's a position in the revisor's shop, a critical position in their IT department. The LCC has a couple of temporary staff that we need to bring on board to support the redistricting process. Mr. Chair, that's a quick overview of the overall budgets. The directors are here to talk about their individual budgets, and we are available for questions.
Well, thank you. And next I'll call up Robert Inman.
Ryan.
Was it?
Ryan.
Is it Ryan? Oh, Ryan. Sorry. It's early in the morning, and I guess I got to clean my glasses. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the tape. And
Chair Nelson, members, my name is Ryan Inman. I am the reviser of statutes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you here today. With respect to our budget request for the upcoming biennium, the spoiler alert here is that we are largely a no-change budget request, aside from the compensation changes. As Mr. Huebiger mentioned, we have one large change request, which I will note and discuss with you here, and I'm happy to answer any other questions you may have. We are asking for a new FTE in our IT department for a second database administrator and programmer. We currently have one individual filling what is essentially a dual role. Often organizations will have a single database administrator and then someone else who does the programming side. We have one individual that is doing both. It's become particularly difficult for us to manage this situation now because we have more than doubled the number of databases that we manage over the last 5 years. We also have increased the amount of data that we store by nearly a factor of five. And so really what this is resulting in is it slows our development process. Nearly everything that we do and that the legislature does is tied to the database. So when we make changes to our drafting system, to the bill status system, or to any of the systems that the House and Senate use, it takes us longer to actually do that work because we only have one individual that's able to do it. Perhaps even more fundamentally and more importantly, what this results in is a security risk. Our vendor currently recommends that we do annual releases and quarterly patches for security purposes. Because we only have one individual staffing this critical area, we're only able to do those releases once every 2 or 3 years, and we only do patches once a year. And so that does lead to a real security risk. We've been fortunate that we haven't had issues thus far, but as I told the LCC, I come from my mother's school of paranoia and think that we should be as secure as we possibly can moving forward. So with that, that's just sort of a really brief overview of what we're asking for. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Members, questions? All I can say is that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we have Mr. Nobles. Welcome to the committee, and again, state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And our budget proposal is much like the reviser in that we are trying to obtain funding for our current level of staffing to do the work that we are required to do. And that would be staffing of around 65 people. We, since the last time we received a budget, have had some additional responsibilities added to the statutes. And as I think you may know, we have been doing a significant amount of work related to MNLARS, related to DHS, and other issues. But there may be other things that occurred during this legislative session that add responsibilities to us, but sitting here right today, we are asking for funding for the positions that we currently have. And that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Quick and simple. Questions for the legislative auditor? Quiet bunch this morning. Lost a warm out last night.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next I have Elizabeth Lincoln. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Elizabeth Lincoln. I'm the director of the Legislative Library. I'm happy to talk about what the library does anytime and our budget. Our budget proposal is basically no change other than the compensation changes that Greg talked about earlier, and a very slight change in our server costs. So basically it's the same as it's been for a couple of years other than those two changes. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions I can see coming here. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Next we have Solincheski. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Susan Lincheski. I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. I'm guessing you all know what the Pension Commission does. Many of you, or several of you, are on the Pension Commission. And I think I was here about a month ago talking about what we do. Our budget is I think, the smallest of the groups, roughly $500,000. The biggest items in our budget are salary for our three full-time staff. We have a commission assistant, an analyst, and myself, the executive director. And then the other large item that's in our budget is the annual amount for our consulting actuary. So we have an actuary that we can turn to during the interim and also during the session to answer questions and also do monitoring of the pension plan's actuarial reports. Our contract with Deloitte is up at the end of June. And we will be then having to do an RFP and hire a new consulting actuary for the start of the next fiscal year. We anticipate that the cost of that contract will go up by about 3% annually, so that reflects some research we've done on what we'll likely see when we do an RFP and ask for proposals. And that is my presentation. Of course, happy to take questions.
Again, questions? Well, thank you. You're good. Everyone's getting off easy today.
Thank you.
And next I have Michelle Weber. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Michelle Weber, and I'm the Director of the Legislative Budget Office. The change request for the Legislative Budget Office is found on the last page of your packet from the LCC, and currently the budget supports 7 staff within the Legislative Budget Office. The office is expected to assume responsibility for fiscal note, oversight, coordination, and analysis prior to submission to the legislature, beginning on September 1st of this year. The change request is to add an additional 5 staff to the office, as well as support the possibility of leasing space on a more permanent basis. Right now, we are located in the basement of the state office building on a temporary basis. The rationale for requesting the additional staff is taking into consideration the quantity and complexity of fiscal notes that occurred during the legislative session. It's a significant risk to the timeliness of information being provided to the legislature with the current level of staffing that's available in the office. Right now, Minnesota Management and Budget has 17 individuals that can participate and contribute to the fiscal note process and analysis that occurs. And with the Legislative Budget Office just having 7 individuals, that's a significant significant level of understaffing for the necessary responsibilities that the office is assuming. A very concrete example of this is in the Health and Human Services area. So far this year, there's been over 400 fiscal notes affecting that area. MMB has 3 executive budget officers that can review and analyze those fiscal notes, as well as a team leader that could provide assistance. And with the staffing level at the current office, we would only be able to assign 1 individual to that policy area to ensure that we're covering all policy areas. I am not requesting the same level of staffing that MMB has available, recognizing that MMB has additional responsibilities. They produce the economic forecast, the governor's budget recommendations, and things of that nature. So I'm requesting a total of 12 staffs, the 7 existing and 5 additional.
Questions, members? Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have a sense for what the time delay would be for a request, say, in the HHS area, if you had 1 person working on it versus 3 or 4 at OMB?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I haven't done that type of time study analysis to know where the funnel, per se, starts to back up and what it might look like. One of the risk mitigation strategies for this, if unsuccessful in receiving additional staff would be to look at whether or not the legislature might be willing to consider things such as limiting the number of fiscal notes that could be requested, or looking at the Legislative Budget Office perhaps providing analysis of the more complicated or controversial. If we were to make no changes to current process, there just would be a significant risk to being able to manage that quantity and the complexity.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with the 17 staff that are currently working on this, have you, I've been on a couple of committees where we've still been waiting on fiscal notes for their timeliness. Have you gotten a sense from them about whether they, even that complement is enough to deal with the increasing workload you mentioned?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I have not had a specific conversation with MMB about that. I do work very closely with MMB on the transition of the fiscal note responsibility to the Legislative Budget Office. I know that they also, during the session, are managing multiple priorities with the economic forecast, fiscal note requests, and governor's budget recommendations. So those individuals are all involved in a multitude of activities and not just dedicated solely to fiscal notes.
Representative, any other questions? Well, if not, thank you. And members, the next consideration we have is the recommendation for the House of Representatives budget. And Majority Leader Ryan said he's going to be, wants to start off, and he won't be here till 8:30. So let's take a short recess till 8:30. And what's that? And we could do the mid before we do that. Representative Hewitt, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and so moved.
Representative Hewitt moves the minutes for the April 1st meeting of 2019. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. And we'll take.
And Mr. Chair, just you know, before I forget, just a couple of housekeeping notes as we enter into the kind of the last home stretch of this legislation. I would bring to your attention. Both House File 4 and House File 6. So House File 4 is the HHS budget bill. It does have a direct impact to the Attorney General. And as was mentioned, both with, as I'll say, with House File 4 and House File 6, which is the jobs bill, which also has a direct impact on Attorney General's office. And to your point from last evening's conversation, both are the backbone of government. It's my understanding that we should hear both of those bills in this committee, and so I'm hoping that you'll undertake the processing of those to come to our bill of our committee. Or if that's not as standalones, then I think that you know it certainly requires or obligates us to hear the omnibus bills, because both of those do have an impact on what the Attorney General has in his budget based upon the provisions in those both those bills. So just want you to be aware of those, I'm sure you already are, and hoping that we can hear both those bills in committee before we get too far down the road. Thank you.
With that, members, we're on recess for till 8:30 or when the Majority Leader gets here. We'll get back in order. Call this meeting back to order. And let everyone get into their chairs. And good morning, Mr. Majority Leader. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair.
And if you proceed with your remarks and
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So yesterday, the Rules Committee had a vote to approve the proposed House budget for the next biennium. And so, as I understand it, this proposed budget is in front of you. And I wanted to take a few minutes to just provide some context for it. And I won't be able maybe to say for the entire hearing, but I wanted to set up the thinking behind it. And there are a number of members here who also serve on the Rules Committee, so they've had 3 hours of hearings to go over the House budget. And the short version of this, Mr. Chair, is that the House is in a over $4 million biennial operating deficit. We are losing money every year because the compensation that members receive has been increased as required in the Constitution now, and the appropriation to the legislature has not similarly increased. And so part of this budget requests $4.7 million to account for the increase in legislative pay. We have also conducted a salary study for our staff. We asked the National Conference of State Legislatures to review the compensation of House staff and come back with recommendations. And we can go into greater detail about that compensation study. But the study did compare to the private sector. It compared to the public sector, including the executive branch, the Minnesota Senate, counties and cities in the metropolitan region, and came up with essentially a $4.1 million shortfall in staff salary between what the marketplace is paying people of similar experience and in similar types of positions compared with what the House is paying. The information that we have, and I don't know if it's in your packets, but is available to you, indicates that we have significantly fewer full-time employees in the Minnesota House of Representatives than we did a number of years ago. It's maybe not in the packets, but we can make it available to you. We have fewer FTEs than we used to have, and our compensation is lagging. During the Great Recession, actually just before the Great Recession, we had a similar compensation study done, and it showed us behind, and we started to make some changes as a result. The recession hit, and staff at the House went for 5 years with no pay increase. And in fact, partisan staff, I don't know about on the GOP side, but on the DFL side, our partisan staff voluntarily took pay cuts in order to prevent layoffs because of our tightened budgets. So our team has gone through some tough years for a long period of time, and we are now looking again at our staff compensation and realizing that we are significantly short. So the budget before you includes $4.7 million for member compensation that is beyond our control, 4.1 approximately for staff based on a market comparison, and a number of end-of-life, end-of-service equipment issues that we have, including a 25-year-old duplicating machines that provide the backbone of our ability to produce the paper that we need at peak periods for both committee and on the floor. And we have a very, I think, that caused us to rethink because of the expense and the inability to replace these machines, which we've more than got our use of and our money out of. We are looking at other ways to provide not the same level of service, because that would be cost prohibitive in many ways, but a reduced level of service that we could use technology to better cover our needs and simultaneously reduce some of our demands by changing some of our internal operations. So we're trying to replace at a much lower cost, or duplicating fleet, as they call it. I think that's a strange word, but that's what they say. And we have, there are a number of items that we can go through, and we have department heads here who can talk about it. And so the budget that we're proposing is a 14% increase. It's a significant increase, but it is driven by factors in large part beyond the legislature's ability to control, or the House's ability to control it, and the fact that we have gone so long without making some needed incremental adjustments along the way. Finally, in the past, it's unusual for the majority leader to come and present on the House budget in the State Government Finance Committee. It's unusual to go through it in detail. It's not typical to go through the budget thoroughly in committee at all. Typically in the past, either the DFL or the Republican, depending on who is in the majority leader, leadership staff would give the committee chair a number and say, put this in the bill, and there wouldn't be a lot of questions asked. We feel like with the deficit that we have today, and one last point I'll make in a minute, but with the deficit we have today, we have to do things differently. We have to be open about our budget, what our needs are, and why, in order to justify the significant increase that we are proposing. The last thing I would say is that we also have had a legislative carry forward. So over the years, when we have not used the budget that we have appropriated, we have basically put it in the bank for future needs. In the past, going back to maybe 10, 12 years ago, we had a pretty consistent $4 million to, you know, $4.5 million carry forward. That grew significantly 2 years ago or 4 years ago. It started moving up. But we are now eating through that carry forward so quickly because of our operating deficit that the Minnesota House of Representatives will run out of money in 2022 approximately, unless we drastically reduce all expenses except member pay, which we are constitutionally obligated to continue to pay. So we have to deal with this, or essentially we go belly up, and the changes needed and the number of things that we can control are relatively limited. And so while this is not an easy thing to do, it is a kind of a tough thing to do, but it is necessary. And we heard testimony from nonpartisan staff, and it reminded me that majorities come and go, members come and go, but the strength of the institution of the Minnesota House of Representatives is something that is entrusted to all of us. And we need to make sure that we have high-quality staff, that our equipment isn't going to fail in the middle of session, rendering us unable to do our work. It serves the public, and it also, I think, makes sure that the Minnesota House is on equal playing field and equal footing with the Minnesota Senate and the executive branch during the middle of the legislative session. I think that's important and part of our democratic system. So I would urge you and request that you take a look through this carefully, but give it your favorable consideration.
And Mr. Majority Leader, it's very appropriate to talk about equipment failures, because this morning our emails are down again.
Mr. Chair, without this appropriation, there is not money in the House budget to switch to even to Outlook, which is, you know, another. I think we've got our money out of group-wise too.
Questions, members, for the Majority Leader, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Majority Leader. You talked about the downward trajectory for the carry forward on the House side, and I'm curious, not that you need to know specifics, but is the Senate also on a similar trajectory as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I believe they are on a similar trajectory, but hitting the concrete faster than we are.
Representative Albright.
And I'm sure we'll get into the details, but I certainly appreciate the walkthrough yesterday, and we'll probably have some follow-up questions. But one of the things that I think this points to is we can't continue to do business as we have in the past. I think to the conversation that you and I shared yesterday, we have to put a lot of things on the table in terms of how we function as a body. The mechanics in particular, Ms. Julek and I had a very good conversation yesterday just about replacing three with nine, because they don't make the three that we use now anymore. And I had a very good conversation with the Sergeant at Arms and the Chief Clerk yesterday. And, you know, members, this is an issue, and rightfully so, that affects not us. It affects the state in terms of how we operate business. And so we may disagree on the provisions, Mr. Majority Leader, I appreciate your candor and your willingness to partner to move the body forward.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Majority Leader.
Representative Albright, there was one other thing I failed to mention, which is that the budget proposal does also include an increase in the FTE count to permit 2-to-1 LA ratio for both the majority and the minority.
Other questions? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the Majority Leader. What sort of technological changes are you looking at making? You had mentioned something relative to printing. Are we looking at going to perhaps a digital application for members to read bills, go through bills, different things like that, get away from paper, which for some members, they may not like the walk away from paper, but since I am in technology, I read all my bills on my iPad the night before. Are we looking at something like that?
And Mr. Representative Nash, I know in the last 4 or 5 years we've stopped handing out the bills on the floor, and when we work on them, we do them online So we've cut down a lot of that, at least on the House floor. Majority Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, we basically in this budget are proposing that we replace the current duplicating fleet with something that has less capacity and try to continue where we are for as long as we can so that we can rethink our internal operations. For example, we have a standard, and I think it's maybe 75 pages of handouts that get or copies that get produced for every single committee hearing for the public to pick up. And that's a standard that was invented before the internet. And so we have to look at all of the ways that we distribute paper and find efficiencies. And that, so by the reference from Representative Albright is the three machines that we're replacing, each one will take three of the current proficiency in order to get that done. And so we have to buy nine in order to get the same capacity as three, and even then we won't have the same peak capacity. So we are basically giving ourselves some run room to figure out how to reduce some of our duplicating needs as part of this process.
Representative Nash.
And Mr. Chair, to the Majority Leader, also we hear on a fairly regular basis from Mr. Heller and other folks like him talking about what are we thinking about to make bills and other documents that we deal with accessible to people who are reading impaired, hearing impaired, or otherwise. Are we looking at that as a serious effort to make what we do more transparent to them and available to them in a format that they can digest easily?
Representative
Winkler. Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I think that we do have funds in here for accessibility, and I think Ms. Julek I think Ms. Julek can probably walk you through specifically what those are.
Representative Nash. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler. There's one axiom that holds true in the private sector as well as here in the public sector, and that is no organization is any better than the people within that organization. And so we have witnessed, for those of us who have been here for a while, we've witnessed the beginning of what is going to be a significant amount of retirees and a great depth of institutional knowledge that is critical for people who are elected to come and serve here to have that knowledge and that information. And so to that end, I think what you're doing is a good proposal. I think it's important that those people we rely on to make good decisions be able to have some longevity and to be able to have a career in the research areas and the critical aspects in which we make decisions. And so I don't think that this should be a partisan issue. I don't think any political point should be made as to who happens to be in control when these tough decisions have to be made. And I think it's appropriate that we be moving forward in such a manner to ensure that those who follow us as representatives will be able to make the best decisions based on people who really understand the issues that we need to make public policy on. So thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hertas. And I guess I would just, I want to thank you for that and add that we looked for as many opportunities as we possibly can to do things better and more efficiently through this process. And if members have more ideas about how we can do that, that would be more than welcomed.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the Majority Leader. As a freshman, I had a proposal to take one committee and experiment by going paperless. Had a chair agree, but because, well, you remember those days when we were multi-billion dollar deficits. In fact, the budget time is when this graph showed a decrease, significant decrease in the House budget. And one of the issues was being able to have an on-demand printing at the location. And when you go through your planning, new technology, and et cetera, I would hope that you would look at selecting a committee for a paperless or make a committee room more amenable to paperless. Flat screen TVs are very inexpensive. You could add
ones that had the agenda documents. I mean, there are a lot of different options. You could almost have a kiosk type thing where the documents, you could, somebody could press a button, select the document, and it would print out. I mean, just as you go forward, maybe don't go the full way, but at least have a exploratory option. I think it would save a lot of page time collecting and straightening up in between. But thank you.
Majority Leader.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, maybe the next time you're the majority, that could be your committee. And I think you would have to have the buy-in from the chair, and the, I don't think it would be something that would be top-down, but I think if a committee on its own wanted to try something like that, it would be a worthy experiment.
Representative Quam. Well, any other questions? If not, thank you, Representative Winkler, and hope to see you later.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And sorry for dragging you out this early in the morning.
I was up, Mr. Chair. We were going over your omnibus bill.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barb Julek, and I am the controller for the House of Representatives. And I'll be providing an overview of the budget before you as recommended by the Rules Committee yesterday. And again, many of you probably found your packet already, but there's a series of handouts that I'll be walking through, starting kind of with the overview memo, reflecting kind of where we are currently in 18-19, as the Majority Leader mentioned, and where we are going in 2021. As you are aware, the House is funded through a biennial general fund appropriation, a very small health care access fund transfer that I'll explain in detail a little bit later, and available carry forward funds. In the past, carry forward funds have typically been used for one-time occurrences such as large severance payouts, equipment replacement cycles, or a special session. However, in 18-19, we've been using that carry forward fund to pay for operating costs, primarily the increase of member salaries that went into effect 2 years ago. With the most recent, or that impacted on a biennial basis, our budget about $4.2 million. Taking this budget, this budget that has this operating deficit as a starting point, adding in the most recently recommended increase for this coming July for members, and recognizing the need that we will have redistricting costs coming in the within this biennium as well as some urgent replacement needs, I would expect our operating deficit to be closer to $5.1 million, and then if I assume about a $400,000 use for some urgent equipment replacements, we're looking at a $5.5 million usage of carry forward this biennium, which would leave us a balance of about $2.3 million by the end of the biennium. Continuing on that spend rate, we would run out of carry forward funds at some point in fiscal 22, as the Majority Leader mentioned. In doing that, we wouldn't have addressed any of the issues the Majority Leader mentioned, such as the salary recommendations of the NCSL study, any additional staffing increase requests, such as the 2-to-1 ratio, and any of the equipment needs requests that we'll be reviewing, except for the very, very urgent ones. The budget being proposed for 2021 does take these things into account and does request a 14.6% increase, which is a $10,169,000 increase over the 18-19 spending. In doing this, we are requesting an appropriation increase of $11,511,000 for the biennium in order to address the operating deficit, the NCSL study recommendations, staffing increases, and the redistricting requests. Prior to going into the details of the requests themselves, I just want to do a real brief overview of our spending categories and how the House budget does lay out in general. So there's a handout in your packet that looks like this. Should be the second page. Our first major category of spending is salary and benefits. This portion of the budget represents 93% of our budget. This is where all our staffing costs are, the member salary, any associated payroll taxes with those, our insurance costs, unemployment, workers' comp, as well as session per diem for members. And again, this is about 93% of our operating budget. The next major category we call travel and subsistence. This represents 3% of our overall operating budget. This includes interim per diem, member lodging allowance, district travel, session mileage, and then staff and member travel within the state or out of state. And again, this is 3% of our operating budget. The last major category is kind of lumped into communications, purchase service equipment, and other costs. This is about 4% of our operating budget, not counting one-time investments, which you'll see a lot of in this budget. But this covers member communication reimbursement, our telephone costs, postage, printing, training, our high school page program, all of our maintenance contracts on our major systems, such as our HR system, our accounting system, any of our servers and other IT systems that we have in place here, our annual license agreements for emails, listers, or other department-specific software that we have in place, our streaming services, utilities, supplies, things like that. Again, this represents about 4% of the budget, not counting the one-time needs. And most of the one-time request needs will fall into this area, and you'll hear more from our division directors on that. At which point, I guess I would ask the three department division directors on the agenda to come forward and explain some of their needs.
And Mr. Meyerson. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Good morning. Bob Meyerson, Chief Sergeant of Arms for the House. Chair Nelson and members, appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about the Sergeant's Department and some of the challenges that we have. And I think it might be helpful to put some of the requests and the concerns and the challenges we have in context about who the department is and what we do. And we have a mission statement for the Sergeant's Department, and that is to provide the facilities and environment for members and staff to conduct their legislative business. We do that with a full-time staff of seven, and it's basically divided into two sections. We have the administrative office with my two assistants, and then we have facilities and supply, which you're all familiar with, led by Steve Munoz, and we take care of a wide variety of tasks and duties up there as well. During session, we have the ability to bring on additional staff, and it's kind of unique because the majority of our staff for session, we hire about 21 FTEs during session to take care of the unique needs of our sessions. A little over five years now, we professionalized the department. I shouldn't say we, I wasn't in on that decision, but the department was professionalized, and in doing so, a number of things occurred that gave us the ability to make decisions and look forward beyond just the two-year bienniums. And part of that is why we're here today and some of the requests we're making. We've taken a close look at what we have to in regards with staffing and supplies and facilities, and see that we have some needs. The can has been kicked down the road, and I think in part because of the position the department was in the past. We're non-political, nonpartisan, and we're looking after the best interest of the institution and the members. The duties and responsibilities of the department goes beyond, I think, what people traditionally think of the Sergeant of Arms. They always put it in the context of security, but there's so much more that we do beyond just the security. There is aspects of that. We oversee keys and key card and serve as liaison with the law enforcement, state patrol, capital security, but it does go beyond that. We take care of all the parking and the committee page management, the hiring. In a short amount of time, we hire 19, 20, 21 pages, that's a challenge to find the folks for short-term, that many people short-term. Educational programs coordinator, we have the high school page program and the internship programs, and that's one of the pieces that's in this budget request is to better staff the oversight of our high school page as a chaperone program in the evenings. Regrettably, we have virtually no oversight for the pages in the evenings, and I'd like to do a better job of having oversight there and perhaps fortify the the program, provide some program activities in the evening as well, but first and foremost, concerned about the safety and security of the high school juniors in the evenings. We have a wide range of mailroom activities that we take care of, all the incoming and outgoing mail, a tremendous number of stamps that we process in the metering, and then we track member postage allotments and usage as well. The sergeant's office takes care of all purchasing of goods and services for the house, and also the procurement of stationery. You're all familiar with that, as well as all the other supplies that are needed, everything from paper clips, pencils, pens, and any other PE you can think of. We have telecommunications, the telephones, the VoIP systems are complicated and requires actually a full-time person. Duplication services, I might point out, when you think about the duplication for the house, there's basically two different shops that take care of the duplication. Our shop here in the state office building takes care of, for the most part, all of the committee needs. Last year, we did over 2.5 million documents produced. And I appreciate the conversation and discussion that we've had with regards to taking a look at doing business better. And I think there are some great opportunities. We have had some internal discussions, and I'm looking forward to discussions with the member and leadership for refining our duplication processes in the future as well. We have concerns about the environmental the house business, anything from the carpet, the paint, the air, the quality, heat and cooling, and of course we take care of safety and emergency matters as well. We refine each year the emergency response manual. Our needs come in basically in three forms. We're dealing with staff, space, and then some of our equipment needs. Staff, I mentioned with the high school pages, we'd like to increase staff there so that we have the after-hour chaperone. We have some needs with regards to security. We did make some advancements in the last couple of years. The individuals you see outside the door of the chamber, those are retired troopers who have a background not just in law enforcement, but in regards to executive protection and capital security. Before their retirement, they're involved with the governor's detail and capital security, and they've been a great addition to our staff. And we also have some other areas of staff, and I think that we need to look at in the near term as well. With regards to space, we have some concerns with the environmental controls or lack of environmental controls in some of our supply room areas where we keep our paper. With the fluctuation of humidity, sometimes the paper becomes useless and jams up our machines, either the copy machines, folding machines, metering machines, so on and so forth. And we have some needs with regards to that. And then what has been mentioned with regards to the duplication equipment, we're on borrowed time with that. We have a couple copy machines, the big workhorses, the three, two that are in the building here in the state office building. They're 25 years old, and the same with the workhorse that's over in the chief clerk's office. I passed over the second aspect of the duplication. I'm sorry, let me back up a little bit. We have our duplication center here that takes care of the committees, and there's a second duplication center that takes care of the floor session documents, and that's on the third floor of the Capitol. And last but not least, with regards to the needs of things, is the furniture. We have desks in the members' desks and credenzas and bookcases in the members' offices that were purchased, some of them in the 70s. And the new ones were purchased in the 80s. We were fortunate enough to replace all of our committee room chairs here within the last couple of months, but we're in desperate need of replacing furniture. Our legislative assistant workstations weren't designed for the type of equipment that we have now. We have ergonomic concerns. If you're using an IBM Selectric. It might be well suited for that, but we have problems. They're falling apart. Gobruner is running out of duct tape and Gorilla Glue to fix those, we're cannibalizing old furniture to fix old furniture, and the time is at hand for us to get new furniture throughout. And we've piecemealed it, and we have a plan going forward we'd like to implement. Thank you.
Any questions for the sergeant? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a question for both Mr. Meyerson and Ms. Julek. First to Mr. Meyerson, thank you for your nonpartisan service to this office. The position, many of us think the title Sergeant of Arms, and we think about only one aspect of everything that you provide. My first question has to do with regards to security, and I've certainly conferred with you on a few matters over the years. My question is, it's impossible for you to predict the legislative issues and the crowd control and different things that occur from time to time. And my question to you is, how do you budget for that? How do you plan for that? Because there are times and moments in which a lot of extra law enforcement and security needs to be present. And is it appropriate for you to have some type of contingency fund in which allows you the flexibility to draw down on that and not compromise the safety and security of not only members but the public who come here?
Mr. Meyerson.
Chair Nelson, Representative Hertas. That's a challenge. We try to keep our ears to the track with regards to what is occurring internally, what bills are being heard, and we're constantly in contact with the State Patrol and other agencies that have information with that. And regrettably, sometimes we have to compromise one area to fulfill and, you know, appropriately staff for other areas. It's an ongoing challenge to appropriately staff for some of the events that we have. I feel like we have a conflicting mandate perpetually around here, and one is to provide a secure, one of my mandates is to provide a secure environment for the legislative process for the House members to occur. And the other is to have a free and open and accessible process of government. And they are butting against each other on an ongoing basis. And that's a challenge because I want both. I love it that the public comes in unvetted and to a certain extent, and they have the ability to come and witness what's going on. And on the other hand, it's challenging because I know that there are security threats. We have vulnerabilities. We're porous. And it's a challenge. And I think that there's room for making improvements there and putting a dollar figure. I don't know if that was the question, but that's
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my question was, do you have adequate funds or reserves that will provide you the contingencies to do that, or do you need some extra cushion as a matter of the function of your office and safety to be able to draw down in a time of unexpected need? I mean, do you have, other than the material things you're talking about, do you have enough monies in your budget to deal with these other things?
Sergeant Meyerson.
Chair Nelson, Representative, I'd like to just answer that straight up, but I really don't have a budget such that I operate under. When I have a need, I go forward and I'll connect with the controller.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Julek.
I think one way that I would look at that is someone over. Mr. Meyerson's right. We don't have like a sergeant's budget, and you know, we don't have these little pockets. We have a house budget. Okay. That I work with the directors and try to understand what are your needs, what do we need to budget for, and then as the year is progressing, kind of watching what we're spending versus against that plan and where we're at. So to the point when something comes up, you know, how do we deal with it? There's many ways as a controller you can look at it. You know, are there things that we could cut back on to cover this need? One of the with the uniqueness of the House budget is we do have a carry forward, and to the extent that we look at that in a way that for one-time spending for unknown things to use a process for review during the biennium for things that come up, either to adjust our current spending plan or look at our carry forward as an option to address these unknown things, is a unique thing we have as long as we have a carry forward. You know, when if that is depleted, then obviously we're looking at other things to adjust. But within a year or a biennium, as things come up, you know, how do we manage that need within what's in our approved budget? Is there things we can trade off or not, or are there other resources we could tap into?
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that probably leads into my next question for you, Ms. Julich, is we had not too long ago an unprecedented circumstances in a squabble in separation of powers between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And basically the very thing that Representative Winkler was here talking about, stability and security with staff, it looked like maybe the legislature was going to run out of money. And we were able to use that carry forward balance to basically retain and keep staff, but there were you know, a minimal amount of furloughs, as I understood it, that were necessary, but we were able to limp into the next legislative session to be able to resolve those things. But I don't think that we should ever allow the different branches of government to be coerced by the other ones, and that separation of powers is so important. So with you being the comptroller and a better understanding of how the dollars flow, I would want to make sure, although it's probably not likely that this would happen, this was kind of an unprecedented thing in decades, if ever, but I would want to make sure that the legislative branch in the House of Representatives and the Senate really have that autonomy and have the funds necessary to deal with a problem and even a executive override if it's necessary. And it looked like that was going to be the case a couple of years ago. And there were lawsuits and litigation, and certainly the judiciary wasn't interested in making an affirmative decision because they knew that their budget could be next if they reinforce such a decision. So, you know, what would that number be, and is it prudent for us, you know, as a state, we keep a budget reserve and a growing one at that. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be inappropriate in my mind to make sure that there's always enough treasure in the account to make sure that the legislative branch continues to operate on and into the next biennium.
Ms. Julich.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, one of the goals within this budget is to leave the carry forward at an amount. My target was $3.5 to $5 million, and where this would let us end, or projected to end at the end of fiscal 21, would be about $4.4 million. That is equivalent to 2 month summer burn rate of House spending. Would it have got us to February, which is how long the last issue seemed to have lasted? No. But there were other tools in the toolbox at that time. My understanding is we were able to get transferred funds from the LCC. Well, this assumes the LCC actually has money to transfer, so that's, you know, depending on how broad the issue was, you know, where were those other funds come from. So when this did occur 2 years ago, we did borrow, we utilized carry forward, we had transfers from the LCC, it brought us through February. We then got our appropriation, we were able to pay back the LCC, adjust our spending to go back on the general fund versus our carry forward, and then just, you know, use the carry forward as minimally as possible for that operating deficit of that year, as we would have normally. So this budget does leave $4.4 million in carry forward that with the idea of having a two-month cushion, if you will, to account for a shutdown scenario.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that speaks directly to what I was concerned about, because the dynamics of what had occurred is, you know, a couple of months is fine, but when the legislature goes sine-die, we can't come back into session without the executive branch's consent, because they would call a special session, and the refusal to do that means that the money could potentially run out when there's a disagreement between the legislative and the executive in a shutdown circumstance. So I would suggest or maintain that it's prudent, if we're truly to remain independent, you have to have enough money to get to the next beginning of the next session, which would be a January or a February, depending on which year the biennium that it, well, I guess the biennium is when it runs out, so it'd be probably the January one. But I think, you know, if you've got transferabilities, that's fine, but I think it's just prudent that that separation of powers, that this body should always maintain enough money to fund itself into the next session. And what that number is, probably you're the best person to be able to tell us that, what that is. And Mr. Chair, my last question to Mr. Meyerson is, there's been rumors we're going to get new carpeting in this building and that it was going to occur this summer. And I was just curious if it wouldn't be more appropriate to just hold off on that until this next election cycle, rather than all of us who have just moved to have to pack up everything and move again, whether the logistics of that makes any sense. And maybe it would coincide with a replacement of furniture as well.
Mr. Meyerson and members, we've got two more people that need to testify, and we're getting a lot of questions here. So, Mr. Meyerson.
Chair Nelson, Representative, it is true we are going to get new carpet in the building this summer, and it's going to be a very non-intrusive process. I have been told that they come in, they did their assessment of all the rooms, and they'll come in and they lift the furniture in place, they take it out, and they replace it, and it'll be done with very little disruption.
Representative Quam, and said we've got two more people that
I know, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, because you had discussed L.A. furniture, et cetera, having the new Senate structure with the new stations, they basically have the same quantity of L.A. It would be possible to be able to see what the costs were. That would give us an idea of what that expenditure was. Thank you.
Mr. Meyerson. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyerson, just want to ask a follow-up question about the supervision of the high school PAGE program, or that oversight. That, yes. Did I understand you correctly that there's times when there is not oversight of the PAGE program?
Mr. Meyerson.
Chair Nelson, Representative, that's correct. We have our educational programs coordinator that meets them here at the state office building or Capitol in the mornings, and then they're ticked loose in the afternoon and the evenings, and some of them, about 40% of them, stay at the hotel, and about 60% of them commute back and forth in their homes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Lippert, yeah.
I would just reinforce that I think this is something that I appreciate you paying attention to this, and that this needs to be tightened up a bit soon.
And Representative Lippert, when I heard that they didn't have chaperones in the evening at the hotel, that scared me. And I think that scares all of us, that we've been lucky that nothing untoward has happened in the past.
Right.
Representative Mr. Meyerson.
Chair Nelson, thank you. The one thing I would add is we're very fortunate. We have high caliber students that come in. And the vast majority of them go back to the hotel after grabbing something to eat, and they study their AP history or whatever else. I mean, that's the nature of the students that we seem to attract. So we have some things going in our favor in that regard, but all the same is I think that we need to do something.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and members. And next I have Barry LaGrave, the director of the Public Health Information Service. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Barry LaGrave. I'm the director of the Nonpartisan House Public Information Services Office. We provide photo services for members and staff. We provide television coverage of House activities. We have a front desk area on our first floor. And then also we provide publications, and we create the online session daily news service. To fulfill our mission, we rely heavily on technology, and this proposed budget is focused on three areas: replacing end-of-life equipment, maintaining our existing technology, and investing in select long-term technology. As I said, the proposed budget meets a number of those needs and certainly meets our most critical needs. I'm going to have a couple examples of each of those three areas, replacing end-of-life equipment. In our TV area, we have something called a multi-image processor. And what that does for our two TV control rooms is that is our confidence monitoring for all of our outgoing TV feeds. And those are to TPT, which is our broadcaster, our 24/7 live streaming feeds, the Capital cable system, there's nine cable channels, and also all the feeds that go to the Capital Press Corps. That device failed this past interim, so we put in place a temporary workaround, a Band-Aid in effect, so that to get us through this 2019 session. And so after interim, or when I reach interim, we're going to have a decision to make about replacing that piece of technology or repairing it. A second area of end-of-life equipment involves our largest, most significant public outreach, which is the Minnesota State Fair. At the State Fairgrounds, where many of you have volunteered taking part, we have a State Fair backdrop and a State Fair counter that are both 20 years old. And in the moving back and forth between the state office building and the fairgrounds each year, and then that intense use during the 12 days of the State Fair, those items have gotten banged up quite a bit. The backdrop is not connecting together as well as it used to. The counter is really banged up. And so our proposal in the budget is to replace that backdrop and hope to get another 20 years out of the new one and then repair the counter. The second area is maintaining our existing technology. As part of the Capitol restoration some years ago, both House and Senate Media Services received upgraded television production equipment and facilities. The House's systems went online in January of 2015. The two-year warranties expired in January 2017. And we have been without warranties or a service agreement for all that equipment since January of 2017. And we're currently working with the manufacturer on coming up with a scope of service agreement for our critical core equipment, not for everything, but for the really critical core equipment that we need to keep in operation. So our goal is to establish a service agreement for that core equipment. Barring the ability to do a service agreement, the House budget includes funds that would assist us with maintenance and repair of not only the TV equipment, but other technology that our department relies on. The third area is investing in select long-term technology. A couple of examples. Our audio and videos and control signals that come from the Capitol, they come over to the computer room here in the basement level. They go through an equipment rack into another rack and then up to our TV equipment room upstairs. As part of that Capitol restoration, one of those equipment racks was taken out of service. It was no longer necessary. As a result, in this fiber optic cable, we've got a couple of splices. That's not something you really want to have unnecessarily. That's a significant point of failure. The repair of this splice is not a very involved project, and not a very expensive project, but it does take out of possibility a very significant point of failure in our TV signals. Another item that we'd like to purchase for long-term technology is a spare committee room camera. As you know, the House has TV broadcast cameras in Capitol 120 and then in rooms 5, 10, and 200 of this building. So we have four rooms. We each have four cameras. We have 16 cameras. We do not have a spare camera. A spare camera was not part of the Department of Administration's plan as part of the Capitol restoration. So we would like to have a spare camera on the shelf. If one of the cameras goes down, we can relatively quickly swap it in and from a broadcast standpoint, get that committee room back in operation and as an option for us. The third area actually involves this room. This is the one large House committee room that does not have broadcast cameras. We've long had a goal of putting broadcast cameras in this room. In fact, when the Capitol restoration when the Capitol restoration vendors and the admin talked to us about what were the House plans and desires for our technology, we asked them to build in the infrastructure that would allow camera and audio signals from this room to go to our TV equipment room. So up on the first floor, we have the infrastructure in place to put broadcast, to accept broadcast signals from this room. So the project that we are proposing is to buy cameras for this room and the cabling to get that up to the first floor. And then this room and the committees that meet in this room would also be in the mix of TV coverage. So as you realize, Commerce Committee meets down here. They don't get TV coverage. State Government Finance, GovOps meets down here. So those committees don't receive TV coverage unless they happen to shift to the other room, one of the rooms. So that's the last of the select long-term technology. And our department strives through all of our efforts to provide openness and transparency of House proceedings for the public and provide members with services and members and staff with services. And to do that, we rely on technology. Like many House departments, we rely heavily on technology. And this budget meets many of our technology needs and meets our most critical needs. That's my presentation. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Well, Representative Palm, you wanted to talk to the IT director, not this one. Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of quick questions and a comment. I believe that when we restored the Capitol, there was significant legacy funds that went into that. Now, do you have a and I'll also tell you that if you look at the way the arts and cultural heritage money is spent, millions upon millions of dollars goes for equipment, cameras, new computers, new technology. I would say that restoring parts of this building and upgrading it would be part of our legacy. How much are you looking for, and have you thought about tapping into the legacy money for it?
Mr. LeGrave.
Mr. Chair and members, the thought of tapping into the legacy is never, I mean, we've always had this money for upgrades such as this come from the House budget, House operating budget. The money, you know, the Capitol restoration was an admin project, wasn't a House project, and we were only consulted as far as what would be our goal of having technology needs for the Capitol and the television upgrades.
Representative Green.
Okay, well, I'm going to look into it anyway, and how much are you looking for?
I think, you know, back, Mr. Chair and members, back when we first thought about the putting cameras in the basement, our vendor provided us a ballpark figure of about $60,000 to put broadcast capabilities in the basement here of the state office building. Again, the infrastructure beyond here was already put in place as part of the project.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. That's not very much money in the scope of things around here. And you also had some other requests that you were looking at, too. I'd like to see those and the numbers on those when you get a chance to get them put together.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we can certainly provide that and work with the controller.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. I had a random question, but Representative Green just made me think. Personally, I don't think legacy funding would be appropriate for this. In the Constitution, it says that the dedicated money under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitute. I mean, I think funding things like cameras are things we traditionally fund out of the state government finance budget, and I don't see that as appropriate use of legacy funding. I did have a quick question, though. If we you don't automatically broadcast every committee hearing when there's cameras in there. Is that correct? I mean, I imagine it's a function of your staff also. So even if we put in cameras into this hearing room, that doesn't mean that every committee hearing that takes place in this hearing room would automatically be televised. Is that correct?
Mr. LeGrave, does that mean I got to comb my hair in the morning?
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. I mean, we have four House committee rooms that broadcast cameras. However, we only have two TV control rooms in which to produce that coverage. Now, given that, actually, if there's a committee meeting block during the week, more often than not, we're providing TV coverage. We probably provide TV coverage 95% of the committee blocks that we have a chance to do it. I mean, we're producing 40 to 55 hours of live TV production each week. And often we've got two control rooms running at the same time, simultaneously coverage. But no, it's just the addition of the room provides the public who can't come here additional viewing aspects of other issues that normally wouldn't they wouldn't see.
Thank you. Representative Freiberg. Any other questions? Thank you. And the last person I have is Mike Speaker. I hope I said that right. What? It's Mike.
This is Chair of Committee. It's Mike Spiker, House IT Director. It's fine. People have been mispronouncing that since I was in grade school. it's a pleasure to meet with you here today to go over House IT. House IT is a office within the Chief Clerk's Office. We have 8 staff, and what we do is we support all House offices and caucuses, from everything from the internet to email, website development, website itself, procurement, and IT-related matters through desktops, printers, monitors. We do with your network storage. We provide support to budget and accounting. Barry Graves, House Public Information Services Office, with the public streaming, both the video and every hearing room audio system. We do the recording with the sergeant's office. And anything generally IT related, most importantly lately, IT security. There's 4 areas in which we were looking for major upgrades and changes. Obviously, email is one of them, moving from a group bias to likely an Office 365 product. As you know, that GroupWise has been with us for a very, very long time, and it was a system that integrated well with our network system, and now we see that we cannot sustain this any longer. So we plan to make that move. It's a significant cost increase, obviously, but it's for all of our needs, members, staff, public, and IT, its time has come. The other area is with our SAN storage system. About 5 years ago, we went from roughly about 18 standalone servers. Each office had its own server, physically located in the computer closet or the server room. We've consolidated all of that information into one device with the disaster recovery system in the Senate building, and with additional backup, which gives us one full year's worth of backups. But like most places, we just can never throw anything away, so our capacity is at its end, and also the support and life of the equipment itself will be coming to an end. And unlike cars, with you can always just take it to a mechanic, eventually the manufacturer says we'll no longer support that. The other area is with our Wi-Fi and the AP system and controllers. There too, we're at end of life. There's new technology that we have to embrace because new devices coming online require us to, and also the manufacturer will then suddenly stop support on those after probably within the next 2 or 3 firmware updates. And we've now become reliant on our Wi-Fi, both from our secure Wi-Fi and our public Wi-Fi. The members and staff require it, and also the public requires it these days. So we need to make that change as well. The other area is our email update list distribution. Right now we have a product that we have on site that we maintain and we support through our own templates and our own email delivery system. We're looking for a more robust system, something that integrates with not only our offices and individual member offices, but also through their social media accounts. So that we can leverage the information that you provide to your constituents in a more friendly and in a way that most end users anticipate that the delivery would be. And that's generally it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my understanding is that you're independent from Minute?
Yes, we are independent from Minute.
Mr. Spiker.
We have, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, We use some services from MnIT, and one of them is our internet backbone. We have a redundant connection with MnIT, and they provide our internet. And they do provide some level of security as well. But for the most part, we act independent of them.
Representative Kwok.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we all realize that even though the Senate building was built recently and the equipment is fairly new, it's extremely outdated with Wi-Fi capability and the other systems. Are you looking at when you do the switchover and you do some of the enterprise services of utilizing some of the minute options, or are you looking at, when you go Microsoft, you can go independent of minute? I'm not sure if aggregating gives you a better price point. I mean, what type of thoughts do you have on those points?
Well, Mr. Spiker. Mr. Chair, Representative Kwok, when the capital restoration was being done, there was capital funds for buying equipment to facilitate that building with better AP or Wi-Fi coverage. And going on, knowing exactly what equipment we're going to buy, so we also procured for the House offices. The Senate's purchase was made through the capital restoration, I believe. And we were sort of left with, well, everything should work together because we have sort of a federated system. The revisor's office, the Senate, and the LCC, they manage one portion of it, and the Senate specifically manages the public Wi-Fi system. The House itself is sort of standalone within that federation, and we manage the House Wi-Fi, but we sort of co-own the equipment, the two controllers that provide backup to each other. When we do make a decision about, we'll have to work in cooperation with those other legislative institutions. But we're still investigating exactly what is the best fit for us.
Representative Kwok.
I guess on a lot of the, if we're going to go internal cloud, external cloud, if we're going to go to vendors, looking at the options, and if we did the Microsoft, they, for the email, they have included some very good cybersecurity monitoring capabilities, which would take that out of our hands. And, frankly, they see stuff every hour that we might not see in a month. So are you planning to independently go with our email to them, or are you planning through aggregate through Minute, which still can have a nodal separation?
Mr. Spiker.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Kwok, we're actually looking at doing a little bit different than what the Senate does. The Senate has Office 365, and they are using, they're not using the advanced threat protection, I don't believe. Right now, we employ two levels. We have our Barracuda spam filter, and we have a cloud-based solution, too. And we've had a little bit of growing pain with that, and we'd like to continue with that. I was reading a survey of, small and medium-sized businesses, and they were asked what level of threat that they thought that they exposed themselves to. And they were, most of them were, very little, and so they didn't invest in anything. They're the biggest targets of ransomware outside of, the financial institutions and government. So it really scared us because the cost of an incident is far outweighs any preventative measures. So we installed this cloud-based system. So we stop roughly about 1.5 million emails that have malware, spyware, or phishing attempts. We plan to do that in conjunction with using Microsoft's product as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, but because of all the problems we've had over the last few months with the system, I thought it'd be nice to have a little touching on that, and I will follow up with additional questions offline.
And Mr. Spiker, did I hear you right that the converting to the Microsoft or the, excuse me, the Outlook is going to increase the cost for our internet?
No, it shouldn't increase the cost of internet, but it, how it's licensed, like, for example, GroupWise has a fixed set of licensing as a standalone product. Office 365 is not just email, but it's also our Office products as well as messaging systems. It's a grouped product, a suite of products that we get. So not only are we changing our email, but we're also changing the way we purchase Microsoft Office products themselves. In addition to the install for our local offices here, we're also offered the opportunity to install 5 additional devices on tablets and PCs of account holders.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other further questions? If not, members, thank you for the information and
thank you.
And tomorrow we'll be back here at 8. And with that, members, we're adjourned.